One of the most disturbing figures in the recent documentary on ABC television featuring Dick Smith on population was that 4 million of Australia's workforce are functionally illiterate. That's a huge percentage. Add young people to that figure and it comes to 7 million, a third of our entire population. What's going on in this famous information age? Well, Michael Callanan is a high school teacher working and thinking in Brisbane.
The deployment of information and communication technologies in Australian education has been rapid and widespread. Prime Minister Gillard insists that raising standards and achieving strong outcomes for all students is the focus of her digital education revolution. Accordingly, the federal government has been assisting schools to achieve a computer-to-student ratio of 1:1. Over 750,000 computers have been provided to secondary schools across Australia by the start of this year. There's no doubting both the power of these new technologies and the unbridled enthusiasm with which they've been adopted. So one would reasonably expect from the fanfare accompanying the promotion of computers in schools that there would be a good deal of evidence that using computers has a beneficial effect on academic achievement. Unfortunately, this is not the case. Two particular aspects of this situation should perhaps concern us. Firstly, there's no unequivocal evidence that computers have any beneficial effect on student achievement. And secondly, literacy rates amongst Australian students are in significant decline. Let's look at literacy first. In 2009, the OECD Program for International Student Assessment tested a random sample of over 14,000 Australian students from more than 350 schools. The results indicated that the average scores of Australian students in reading literacy and mathematical literacy have declined significantly since the year 2000. At the same time, Jeff Masters, head of the Australian Council for Educational Research, was commissioned by the Queensland Government to investigate literacy and numeracy levels in that state. He concluded that there'd been a real decline in the state's literacy and numeracy levels between 2004 and 2007. Following the same trend, national testing results for all Year 9 students indicate a decline in reading achievement across every Australian state for both boys and girls from 2008 to 2010. This decline in literacy is reflected internationally, with more 15-year-old Australians amongst the lowest performing students in the world and fewer of our students in the top bracket. So, even though expenditure on education in Australia increased by 40% in the first decade of this century, the result was that key measures of our students' fundamental literacies declined. The acquisition of adequate literacy and numeracy skills is a crucial educational outcome for young people. These skills have positive consequences for further study, job opportunities, and more generally, individual and social well-being. Conversely, persons with lower literacy and numeracy levels are more likely to be unemployed, earn lower incomes, suffer poorer health, and be involved in the criminal justice system. In short, literacy is positively correlated with quality of life. Now let's look at the effects of computers on student academic achievement. Many studies have been done in this area. However, the results are anything but conclusive. In 2005, the World Bank published a comprehensive review of the available research, which concluded that the positive impact of information and communication technology use in education has not been proven. More recent US research suggests that the provision of high-speed internet connection and universal access to computers for high school students is associated with negative impacts on student achievement and a widening of the so-called digital divide. A pertinent question, therefore, is why massive public resources are being devoted to the increasing deployment of these technologies in our schools, where not only do they have no unequivocally demonstrated beneficial effect on educational outcomes, but it seems they may actually have a negative effect, with recent indicators of student achievement in the critical areas of reading and mathematical literacy in decline during the very years when computers have achieved their highest concentration in schools. There are a number of aspects to this problem. Some have to do with computers, some with schools, and some with the students themselves. Let's look at the machines first, but more particularly our attitude to them. And here I'd like to introduce the concept of a fetish. A fetish is typically an object of obsessive devotion or interest, which is revered by people because it's believed to possess magical or supernatural qualities. So, by extension, Computer fetishism refers to a human attitude to computers which mistakenly endows them with magical powers. In this case, a miraculous ability to improve both the pedagogical process and the academic outcomes. In the educational context, the belief in these mystical properties can be illustrated by the common and naive assumption that student plus computer necessarily equals improved educational achievement. Or in other words, as the bumper sticker says, magic happens. On one level, this attitude to computers is understandable. As humans, we tend to be optimistic. Hope springs eternal in the human breast. We intuitively realise the immense potential of the new technology. We desire what's best for our children. We want to believe in progress. These are basic biological drives. They're evolutionary imperatives. As such, they affect and condition much of human behaviour, but sometimes in quite irrational ways. When a powerful piece of technology is developed, there's inevitably a lot of enthusiasm about its potential applications. Computers have rapidly attracted a veritable bandwagon of supporters. Students and teachers, educational bureaucrats and managers, parents and politicians, industry advocates and marketeers, and finally the swelling ranks of computer experts, consultants and technicians. Each of these groups has its own reasons for being enthusiastic about the deployment of computers in education, but in the face of declining literacy rates, one has to ask just how much this enthusiasm is justified. Is our fascination with screen technologies actually having a counterproductive pedagogical effect? Now let's consider the school environment. Schools have lately become much bigger and more complex organisations, with business managers, human resource managers, finance managers, professional development managers, information technology managers, project implementation managers, as well as the usual mission statements, vision statements, strategic plans, performance objectives, and the whole panoply of bureaucratic paraphernalia, to the point where one is left wondering just what the primary function of the school has become, when teachers as a proportion of total employees in education continues to decline, just as frontline doctors and nurses do similarly in the health sector. A major concern here is whether core educational objectives are being subordinated to bureaucratic imperatives, and the professionalism of teachers is being steadily eroded. Many school managers, having left the classroom far behind, now spend much of their time determining what practicing teachers will do in the classroom. These managers easily succumb to computer fetishism, earnestly advocating for more technology in schools, quite secure in their belief that students will achieve wonderful things. But even when the technology is working, the magic just doesn't seem to be happening. The jargon used in this discourse is instructive. Starry-eyed computer advocates are typically concerned to emphasise a significant difference between contemporary digital and traditional learning environments. We are told, for instance, that students today are digital natives rather than the older generation of digital immigrants. They're people of the screen rather than people of the book. They can multitask. They're rich content developers through social networking sites. I've even been told that students wander around with their mobile phones making global connections with rich learning environments. A great deal of this nonsense is a commercially driven variant of the bureaucratic babble which plagues lots of contemporary organisations. It makes the most sweeping, vague and aspirational claims, but fails to cite any specific demonstrated unequivocal causal connection between computer use and improved educational outcomes. And that's because there isn't one. The World Bank report notes that one of the most enduring problems with technology and education is that a lot of advocates think of the technology first and only consider the educational applications later. Again, this is a manifestation of computer fetishism. Politicians, technology advocates, and educational bureaucrats are only too happy to throw money in the form of computers at schools. The machines are powerful beyond measure, everybody wants one, and it certainly looks like progress. But unfortunately, our endless fascination with the screen seems to be producing a less literate generation. Now let's look at the students, because supposedly that's who all this educational technology is meant to benefit. A big problem here is that the advocates who are most gung-ho about computers tend to think in terms of an idealized model of the student. This is mistaken, but perhaps understandable. Perhaps they tend to romanticise their past or generalise from their own academic ambitions into the future. Whatever the reason, they assume the typical student is someone who is perpetually curious and thirsting for knowledge. So, for example, it's suggested that all students need to be provided with access to what's termed 24/7 learning. To a practicing teacher, this is manifestly ludicrous. A tiny minority of such students may exist, but the vast majority have many other time-consuming interests and pastimes: sport, music, other creative pursuits, part-time work, and especially socialising all compete for students' time and energy. In the end, there are only 24 hours in a day. Most students employ technology for socialising and entertainment, not as an educational tool. A final and more general issue with students is the question of whether their cognitive function is being altered by using computers. Eminent British neuroscientist Baroness Susan Greenfield and others have recently attracted much controversy by suggesting that computers may affect brain function in significant ways. There's still a lot of research to be done here, but it would seem highly imprudent to reject this possibility out of hand. As Greenfield herself is fond of saying, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. William of Ockham would surely agree. A common response to the issue of computers and literacy is to question whether in fact literacy is important anymore. Do the people of the screen really need to be conventionally literate? A few years ago, the social commentator Hugh Mackay wondered if students in the future would need to be able to read and write at all, and whether young Australians might be growing up in a culture where they could be entertained, informed, and communicate effectively without mastering anything but the most rudimentary literacy skills. He even suggested that literacy might be no longer essential for making your way in the world. This is disturbing stuff. The modern ideal of an advanced, educated, literate citizenry in a liberal democratic state has been around since the 18th century. Contemporary tendencies in post-industrial societies that are turning active citizens into passive consumers of a commodified entertainment culture are destructive of education, critical thought, civic engagement, and ultimately of democracy itself. Don't get me wrong, computers are extremely useful in education, but clearly we need to adopt a more nuanced and evidence-based approach. We need to realise that computers are very powerful tools in the educational process, but that's all they are, and there's certainly no magic involved. Computers can't replace the relationship that's at the core of all good teaching, but they can certainly enrich it. They can't miraculously improve student learning outcomes, but they can definitely facilitate the process. Most students benefit enormously from good teaching, which uses computers appropriately, as tools in the process, rather than treating them as fetish objects which will somehow confer magical benefits. Resources for education are limited. Let's not waste them. Arguably, much of the 40% increase in educational spending in the last decade has been wasted on a plausible fiction. Instead of just adding more machines to the educational mix in the hope that something magical will happen, there are more proven measures that can and should be adopted. We need to learn how to use computers more effectively. We need smaller classes. We need more teachers and better teachers. We need to train them better, treat them better, and pay them better. Effective teachers are absolutely critical to the educational process, and so perhaps we need to remember above all that any teacher who can be replaced by a computer probably should be.
And Michael Callanan is a high school teacher in Brisbane. By the way, there's a feature in this week's Science Show on how iPads seem to be working well with students in schools in Western Australia. Next week, a grandmother confronts her family's creationist beliefs. I'm Robin Williams.
Creativity is the invention of a new idea that has a second life. Maybe that second life is that someone finds it beautiful or useful, or it becomes a patent or a trademark, but it's an idea that finds a foothold in the world.
The search for what creativity means in the 21st century on Future Tense. Download the program from the RN website or look for us on iTunes.